Welcome to our podcast, Sounding Off with Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter and go over to Facebook and give us a like. We've got all kinds of great information there as well. I am thrilled to have on the line with me Steve Peck. Steve, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, Kim, thanks so much for having me on your show. And before we jump into the conversation, I just want to congratulate you for the Vern Bickel Award that I saw that you were given here recently, and what an achievement that is for your work on behalf of free markets and freedom in general. I think it's an incredible honor, and I just wanted to call that out.
Well, Steve, thank you. I am really honored to receive that from the Independence Institute, and so thank you. I think you and I both believe in this whole American idea and that it is worth preserving. You've done a tremendous amount of work in that arena, and that's why we're doing this podcast today. You are a veteran, served on the school board. You know, tell us just the experiences that you've had in your life.
So I'm 36. I'm married. We've got three kids. I read a book while I was in graduate school called One Bullet Away, The Making of a Marine Corps Officer by Nathaniel Fick, that inspired me to look again for a second or third time at the military. And ultimately, I decided to join the Navy. I commissioned into the Navy in 2008 and was in the Navy medicine side of the military. So my first assignment was at Naval Hospital, Jacksonville, Florida. And then I had the opportunity to serve with the Marine Corps and deploy with them in 2013 during the Arab Spring. It had some very interesting experiences in Cairo and in the Gulf of Aden area, if you're familiar with that, by Djibouti. At any rate, I left that, and when we left the military, wanted to move to Colorado and had a great opportunity with DaVita Healthcare here based out of Denver, where they specialized in end-stage renal disease and kidney failure, and worked at Anschutz. And now I work for another large medical company and live here in Islands Ranch. So, yes, I'm active in local politics and had an opportunity to serve on the Douglas County School Board.
Well, and we'll talk about education a little later in this particular podcast, because it is so important. But, you know, it's been such a crazy time during this whole COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption and what it has done to our economy. And I know that it's been really important to you as you've looked at the effects on our businesses to get our economy going again, to open Colorado back up. So you've been involved with this Reopen Colorado movement. Tell us a little bit about that, Steve Peck.
Yeah, it's an interesting story. I actually did not found the Facebook page. There's a gentleman, Andrew, and I forget how to pronounce his last name, but Andrew, along with Joe Ullman, have been, I think they were the founders or co-founders of the Facebook page. And I was one of the early members of that page. It's now grown to over 25,000 Coloradans. And we actually have more people trying to get on the page than we're admitting. The number of people that are joining or asking to join increased by hundreds every day. And so I feel like the sentiment is shifting, not as fast as I think it should. I mean, we've been having this conversation now for 5 weeks, 6 weeks. It was pretty apparent that when this event made landfall here, it wasn't the Cat 5 hurricane that we thought it would be. It was more like a tropical storm. And that's not to minimize any one person's loss of life at all whatsoever. But when the forecast comes in and we think it's going to be, you know, over 2 million people, and if we downgrade it, we should celebrate. And it's been downgraded several times. And I think people have been recognizing that there has been an adjustment. And maybe the risk profile of this disease isn't as bad as we initially thought, which is cause for celebration. But what we haven't seen is the response from a public policy standpoint. The response still seems to be this wait and see and overly cautious posture that just is disproportionate and extremely harmful. Excuse me.
Well, it has been extremely harmful for our small businesses, particularly in the restaurant, the bars, and the tavern industry. And I just saw something that there was a headline just recently that the CDC has come out and said that actually they were incorrect, or it is incorrect, that in fact the COVID-19 virus does not live on surfaces for as long as they initially thought. And it's kind of like we have had all kinds of misinformation that they have used to shut down our economy. And as you mentioned, from a public policy standpoint, they don't seem to be really making any nimble changes from a public policy standpoint to adjust for the misinformation that we've gotten.
That's right. When we, you know, I think I first heard about the COVID story sometime in January. And if you recall, way, way back in January, there was, you know, talk about Soleimani and his death. If you recall, there was, you know, comparisons to World War One and setting off a new global conflict. There was so much we didn't know about COVID-19 at that time. It was all coronavirus, right? And I think what your point about the CDC's information and how it keeps changing, my takeaway is we just don't know. We don't know a lot. So I'm not surprised to find that the guidance is evolving. Because as data comes in and research is completed, we know more and more every day. But what I find most frustrating is that it's not exactly new information. At least the most vulnerable, the people that are most vulnerable, the elderly, the people with comorbidities, we've known that those people are most at risk for weeks now. So why is it we're asking everybody across the board to have this shelter-in-place policy? It's a one-size-fits-all. There's no nuance to it. There's no awareness of the fact that there are secondary and tertiary negative effects that are going to be catastrophic for people, that already have been catastrophic for people. It's just this unblinking demand that you're at risk, and we have to follow these rules because the experts tell us to.
Well, and as you mentioned, it doesn't take into account the other effects. It's just this, like you say, this very narrow vision, and there doesn't seem to be any ability to kind of change that public policy narrative. Which let's go over to the rallies. There's been a number of rallies down at the state capitol to reopen Colorado, and you've been somewhat involved in some of them. Tell us a little bit about those.
Yeah, so the first rally was on April 19th. And what's interesting, that was the biggest rally. That was the first one. And I don't know if anybody really knows the headcount, but if you were there, I mean, you know, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners were there, you know there was thousands of people, most of them in their cars, because at that point there was a lot of people that were still very leery about, you know, how at risk they were and how this was transmitted and whether or not a mask was effective to, you know, halt that transmission. So a lot of people in their cars, you couldn't get around the Capitol. I mean, people were making laps, and the law enforcement was redirecting people in a circle. And it was taking people over an hour to get around this circle. I got out of the car because I wanted to take as much footage as I could. And I felt like this was gridlock. We couldn't get anywhere. And Andrew, the founder of Reopen Page, was inspired, I think it was by a friend who was at the Lansing rally. And if you recall, they were rallying, they called their rally Operation Gridlock, which I personally I don't like the imagery of gridlock. No, I don't think that's helpful. I would rather be solutions oriented and say, you know, we object to these policies for these reasons, you know. I don't think it's helpful to say we're for gridlock. But gridlock is what was created downtown at the Capitol, there were people out on foot, and I ended up taking my phone out and just talking to strangers and asking them, where are you from? Why did you come down here? And what's your story? There were realtors, there were students, there was a programmer, there was just a teacher from Boulder, people from all walks of life, some farm kids that were just down here saying, why can't we be free to live life and to engage in commerce? And it was so exciting and so cool. And if you recall at the time, there were a lot of people saying, we're all suffering here, but you guys are prolonging the suffering. But we're going to have a breakout here in 2 weeks. And I had some really nasty things, I mean, really, really nasty, saying, well, I hope you end up in the hospital. And you shouldn't receive care because you're ignoring the science. Well, that was April 19th. We've had, there's been at least two other rallies since then. People have seen the photos from Water's Edge Winery, where nobody was observing social distancing, nobody was wearing masks. Same thing down at CNC's breakfast joint in Castle Rock. So at some point, people have to ask themselves, okay, what is going on here? If this is as dangerous as people say it is, where is the spike in new cases here in Colorado? Because we've had hundreds of people disobeying the rules, and there's no commensurate spike. So, I mean, what's your reaction to them, Kim?
You've been at some of these things. Yeah, a couple of things. First of all, it seems like real leadership or real representatives, instead of, I agree with you. Initially, when we first realized that COVID-19 was here, I think it did make sense to take a pause, to try to get our bearings on what was happening exactly. But then it seems like it would have been the responsible thing by CDC or CDPHE to do like some control studies. Here we have a group that we have them quarantined in their home. And over here we have people that are out there living life as regular Americans and have a control group to see what happens with that. And I think it's pretty irresponsible that they did not do that. That is science, isn't it, Steve? I mean, you're in the medical field. Isn't that science to do that?
That's the irony of the – that's just lazy sloganeering when people say, well, I follow science, as if just by uttering the word science, it shuts down all other discussion. I'm for science, you're not for science, which is extremely lazy shorthand for you are not a modern person, you don't understand statistics, and really this conversation is not worth having because I'm on the side of science. In fact – science demands continuously revisiting and retesting. I mean, unless we're talking about, which is so frustrating. I saw this morning that there was a letter signed by 500 physicians that are challenging the conventional wisdom out there. Now, I know that won't get picked up by mainstream outlets. I forget what, it was on Real Clear Politics this morning, so it had to be semi-mainstream. Dr. Jay Bhattacharya out of Stanford has been doing a series of hour-long conversations with the Hoover Institution and Peter Robinson. His work's been invaluable. There's no more sober-minded physician. And what's interesting about Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, if your listeners haven't seen those YouTube videos, I can't recommend them more strongly. What's interesting is he is both an economist and an MD. So I think he has a unique point of view to offer everyone because he can see this issue both from the standpoint of medicine and from the economy. And his findings are that the incidence, the number of people with antibodies is much higher in the population than we originally thought. So again, the data is still coming out. I don't think anybody on any side should be too confident about whatever their position is, because this could obviously mutate, this could change, and then people like you and I should be ready to adapt as needed. But based on what I'm seeing today, the reaction is obscene.
Well, and to that point, yes, you and I have been at some of these rallies, and there should have been a spike if, in fact, this was following, quote unquote, the science that has been implied to keep us shut down. The other thing is right before Governor Polis issued his executive order, and he's been busy with all these executive orders, that he was basically going to shut down much of the economy here in Colorado. Everybody ran to the grocery store. They were standing in line next to each other. There should have been a spike, you know, 10 days to 2 weeks after that as well, and there hasn't been. And so to ask the question, why, you know, why didn't they do a control group? Why have we not acknowledged that? I think is really important. And but let's jump on over to our third subject. And education is very important to you. I know it is because you stepped forward and served on the Douglas County School Board. And so let's talk about what you see regarding education now when we're in COVID-19, Wuhan virus reaction disruption, and going to the future. So what's your thoughts on that, Steve Peck?
Oh, yeah. So there's so much to weigh in on. I think, I guess, to give listeners a little bit of background, I was on the Douglas County School Board. I currently serve on the Ascent Classical Academy School Board, and I have two kids in elementary school. So we've had a front row seat to what the stay-at-home order has meant for our kids and their education. I'm just anecdotally from my own household experience, we were able to get through it. And it wasn't so bad. My kids at some point seemed to prefer it, but that's not necessarily good for them in the long run. And I work from home and my wife's a physical therapist and, we've been able to get through it. But what I'm concerned about is the disruption that's going to be coming in the fall, because what's likely to happen is that the individual school districts will have some vague guidance that they're given by the state. This is the most likely scenario. And then those school districts are going to create policies probably independent of each other. So it's very possible that Douglas County has different sets of rules than Jeffco. And then how do those school boards and those school districts adopt and adapt for the fall? I mean, are they going to have in-person, in-classroom education, or will this be more stay-at-home? And if they're in class, will there be social distancing? Will they require masking for your elementary kids? And my strong belief is that there will be a push by a percentage of people to demand masking, and there will be another group of people that are going to say, no way, that's not going to happen to my kid. And so and this is speculation at this point. This isn't based on from anything, because we're looking ahead 3 or 4 months. I think there'll be some parents who say, you know, if I'm teaching my kids at school anyway, what service is the school district providing? I will pull my kids out and I'll homeschool myself. And it could be for a variety of reasons, maybe out of fear for the virus. It may be out of opposition to a masking rule. It may be out of frustration and just throwing their hands up in the air. But what that would mean for the school district is that the PPR money, the funding per pupil, would be reduced if you had, let's say, 10 or 15%, 20% of parents to say, I'm just going to teach my kids at school. It'd be devastating for the school districts. It'll be very interesting to see what kind of guidance comes out of that. I was communicating with one of the regents at CU this morning and asked him, you know, in anticipation for this interview, what CU is planning to do. And it was Chance Hill, and he said that at this point they don't have any guidance, but that they should have guidance as soon as June. So it'll be interesting to see how that rolls out. But I foresee a lot of turmoil and a lot of frustration in the fall.
Well, regarding this mandatory masking or mandatory face covering, it's become a bit of a political issue because the research that I've done is in my hometown of Lone Tree, they now have mandated face coverings. My understanding that science says that face coverings are 97% ineffective. And So I thinking about it, and there's some people that take great comfort in seeing other people masked up and them wearing masks. And of course, there are people, as you mentioned, with underlying health conditions that it is important that they be very careful. But it's also a bit of a freedom issue as well. And so I think that there could be some free market answers to this instead of government coming in and mandating. So we just saw this new report out. The CDC said, guess what? The virus does not live on surfaces for as long as we thought that it did. And so that means that you can go to the market and not be quite so nervous about what, you know, that there's a virus on everything there. And you maybe we could even open up our playgrounds. Wouldn't that be a novel idea? But from a free market standpoint, could a business not say that, you know, from 9 to 11 every day, if you're a grocery store or whatever, that is going to be a time that people can shop with masks or without masks, whatever. And then, you know, another time frame, that is where people with masks or without could shop. I mean, it seems like there could be a free market answer to that, Steve.
I love that idea. I think it's a fantastic idea. Obviously, it's dependent upon individuals and individual business owners to make those types of changes. And I think this boils back to my fundamental belief that people, individuals, are going to be the best equipped to respond to this crisis than bureaucracies or public health officials. It's not to say that bureaucracies and public health officials don't have their role. We need to have data. We need to collect the data. But after that, it should be up to individual Americans and responsible business owners and consumers to make choices that fit their risk profile and their needs. But what we have instead is a heavy-handed approach. It's a one-size-fits-all, top-down, you shall do this, or we'll pull your license, or we'll fine you, or you need to lawyer up. And it's just, it's stunning to me. It's absolutely stunning that we're having these conversations. And you think back, I think back to the founding of this country. We had a fit over stamp acts and taxes on household goods to the point where we said, you know what, we're going to have to dissolve these bans and set up our own system. It's stunning to me that 240 years later we're having much more tyrannical approaches and some people are just willing to go along with it.
It has been astounding. It seems that we've seen many people just throw their civil rights into the laps of these politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties, as you mentioned, have been very heavy-handed. And so we need to put our thinking caps on. You've asked some great questions regarding why and what and how. But let's go back to education. Could we not have some kind of a free market answer with this? So we've got homeschooling. We have what happened here where kids were at home, that they were online. That and homeschooling, they're not the same thing. People may think that they're homeschooling where they're doing all of this online stuff. And in fact, somebody in the homeschooling arena told me that homeschooling is actually easier than what parents and families have been having to try to do on this whole online thing. But so we have the homeschooling, we have the online. And then, you know, we have our schools, and we're going to have this whole masking question. I think you're so correct on that, Steve. So could we not, in education, have a free market answer? So elementary school A is a school where if parents feel comfortable, you know, they want their kids all to wear masks and sit in little circles, they can go there. And then school B, could no mask, kids can play on the playground and do whatever they want. What do you think about that?
You're picking up what I'm putting down. It's exactly what I was thinking. I hadn't had it, I was thinking about this in terms of education, but you had basically said the same thing when it comes to an individual business. From, you know, AM hours are going to be no mask, no social distancing. PM hours are going to be the opposite. And if you own a coffee shop, my wife owns a physical therapy practice. Some of her patients, it's been interesting. Many of them say, well, I don't mind if you're masked or not. And my wife, out of just due diligence, is remaining masked, but she allows the patients to be unmasked. And my wife's healthy. She's 36. She has no underlying conditions. She's at almost no risk of getting this. But as a business owner, she wants to make sure that everybody feels comfortable and that she's not putting herself out there as you know, being irresponsible. But when it comes to school and education, I think you're exactly right. The districts could. Now, it would take some work, and the work would probably be begun sooner than later, just to get people thinking about it, have the conversations now. But, you know, there's a lot of schools just in here in Douglas County. And let's say you're just talking about elementary schools in Douglas County, or, you know, another county here, Weld County or Jefferson. What if the district said, hey, we're going to designate, you know, these schools as mass schools. And if you want your kids to if that's where your comfort level is, then we're going to need to make these changes. I think that makes complete sense. Unfortunately, not to be pessimistic, the school system is not always open to outside the box thinking. Why would we need to have the same set of rules for every single school is beyond me, but we see it all the time. So I would like to see individual parents and principals start advocating for this sort of breakdown where you could stratify for policy. We'll see if that gets traction or not, but it seems to me like a great answer to the problems that we will see in the fall. It's only a couple months away, you know?
It's not that far off. We need to be thinking of solutions. And, you know, one other thing, Steve, is measured responses. You'd mentioned the words heavy-handed, and there's no way heavy-handed and measured can be in the same sentence. They can't coexist in the same sentence. They just don't.
That's right.
And
did I put them in the same sentence? They shouldn't be.
No, you didn't. I did. I'm just saying from a narrative standpoint, you can't do that. And a measured response is a thoughtful response. And that is a response that we really should be getting from these politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties instead of this heavy hand. So we've got about 3 minutes left on this podcast, Steve Peck. What's the final thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
I think what I'm hoping for is that people, individual family members, individual churches, individual Cub Scout, Boy Scout, troop leaders, we need individuals to start to push back. Everybody has a sphere of influence, and everybody has members of their family, business partners, church members that they can talk to and influence. And we need to start challenging the narrative. I feel like I've been challenging it for 5 or 6 weeks now, and it's moving, but not at the speed it needs to move. If you own a business, if you're a police officer, if you're a judge or an attorney, I think it's incumbent on each of us to really start to put your own name and reputation out a little bit and start to say something. Start to push back on this idea that we all have to fall in line and do whatever the conventional wisdom is or whatever the law is. I mean, we've been practicing civil disobedience. I see these as unlawful, unconstitutional orders. Obviously, that will ultimately be settled in court, but we don't have 9 months to settle this. And so when I see people's right to worship being suspended, when I see people's ability to buy and sell, to just engage in basic commerce is being infringed upon, I don't know how you come away with with any other impression other than our constitutional rights are being encroached. And the pernicious part about this whole conversation is once they've been rolled back, they're so hard to get back. Because once government reaches, it's reluctant to give that power back. So that's why Kim, I applaud everything that you do every day, but we need more. We need a lot more.
We do. We need to engage in this narrative, and this American idea is worth preserving. We are at a defining moment in our state and our country. Steve Peck, I so appreciate all the great work that you're doing. You're like George Washington. They said those Washingtons were born wise, and I think that you were born wise as well, because in your 36 years, you've come up with a lot of great wisdom. So thank you so much, Steve Peck.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.